By the world than at any time in your history. And you've had quite a history. You were hated by the Egyptians. You were hated by the Assyrians. You were hated by the Babylonians. You were hated by the Philistines. You were hated by the Greeks. You were hated by the Romans. You were hated by the Roman Catholic Church. You were hated by the Third Reich, which grew out of the Holy Roman Empire, which hated you. You were hated by the first Muslims and by the Ottoman Turks and by Muslims again, still hated by many Christians, hated by conspiratorialists, and today hated by a growing number of progressives. It hasn't always been your fault. Much of it has been. The fault that is yours to shoulder is the fact that we herald a message from a God whose name you won't even say. He is the creator of the universe. He chose you to be his people, and yet you have chosen to ignore him. His name is Yahweh. My job is to reintroduce you to him before his return, before it is too late for you, before the intensification of the time of Jacob's trouble, when Israel will be dissected at the waist, with the heart of the land of Israel given to Islamic terrorists who will use it to stage what will be the final solution. A war so egregious it will be between 100 and 1,000 times worse than the great massacre and slaughter of October 7th. I've been at this for 23 years. I began to speak on behalf of Yisrael, to defend Yisrael, risking my life. I've had over many thousands of death threats trying to awaken Yisrael to the threat that is Islamic terrorism, genocide, the death cult of Islam, and then to exposing and condemning the religion that robbed you of your Messiah and the Son of God and your Savior. No, not that Jesus saw. He was a fable. He never existed. The real Messiah. The real Son of God. You ought to know him. He is the most famous of all Yehud. His name is David. He does not have a star. His actual name is Dod. It means beloved. He served as the Passover lamb. And yet you, as God's chosen people, have rejected the covenant that he exemplified. You have made a complete mockery of the mikre, the invitation to be called out and meet with God, the Dod, your king, the Messiah, fulfilled. There isn't even one among a thousand Jews that know that Dod served as the Passover lamb. There's not one in 10,000 that know that Dod carried the guilt of every covenant member in the seal on Masa, depositing it there to perfect the souls of those who choose to be part of God's family. Or that he was the firstborn son because he fulfilled the Qur'an, which is firstborn children. You are unaware of the harvest that arises next, the harvest that is symbolized by standing grain and of wheat, plural, that is designated by two loaves. The only mikra where it is specifically stated that everyone is invited. Shavuot. It is the next harvest on God's calendar. It will commence as the official time of Jacob's troubles, Israel's troubles, where you were assailed and strangled, narrowed, abused, began 7 years before Yahweh's return on Shavuot, the May 22nd, 2026. I would invite those of you who are listening to take Yahweh's testimony seriously, to come to embrace him by name, come to understand his great love for his son, your Messiah, our King, Dod. You can do so by going to yadayah.com. Yada means to know. Yah, or Yahweh, is the familiar form of God's one and only name. We know how to pronounce it, quite simply because he told us how to pronounce it. He introduced himself using the verb haya, explains how to pronounce three of the four letters in Yahweh's name, taking the mystery away. The only letter that is not provided in terms of this pronouncement in haya, which means to exist, ihaya would be I am, is the wa. The wa is presented within the horn that represents these important harvests, both of Shavuot and Teruah, the shofar. But it is most adroitly conveyed through the two most important words in the Hebrew language. Torah. The O sound in Torah comes from the wa. And shalom. Reconciliation. Both show you how to pronounce the wa and yod heh wa heh. So that Yahweh's name is quite easy to pronounce, and it is essential to know. Those who do not know Yahweh by name are not known by him, which means there is no hope for life after this one. And so it is our job to awaken Yisrael. We were given this job because there wasn't a single Yehud who was willing to listen to Yah. And Yah does not go back on his word. He does not renege on a promise. In the very early stages of the Yatsa Exodus, as the children of Yisrael were being as irascible as ever, Yahweh decided that it would be important for him to support Moshe and to let the children of Yisrael know that he was the inspiration behind the Torah that Moshe was delivering. So he asked Moshe to gather the children of Yisrael, and that he said, "I will speak directly to them." He did. Booming voice, brilliant light in their presence. If you're Jewish, you may know how your ancestors responded. If you don't, let me share it with you, because it's why I'm here today. Your ancestors said, "Don't ever speak to us again. We don't ever want to hear your booming voice. We don't ever want to see your light again." This is what you said to the God who created the universe, who chose you as his people, who offered you the covenant relationship, who liberated you from death and slavery in Mitzrayim, Egypt, who asked nothing from you in return other than not to be religious and associate with false gods. And this is how you treated him. His response is surprising to many, not to me. He responded by saying, I agree with them. It is more appropriate that I never speak to them again. Instead, I will communicate through the likes of Moshe. I will have prophets, and I will speak through them to my people. Less aggravating for me. Obviously, less aggravating for them. And the great advantage for everyone is that everyone now has the opportunity. You can choose to listen to Yahweh's voice as it is conveyed through the likes of Moshe and the great Dod, his son, the great prophet Yahshua, for example. You can listen to God speak to you through them, or even listen to him speak to you through me, as I very clearly and completely, as accurately as possible, convey the words that he shared with his prophets in a way that will resonate with those of you who were open and receptive to engaging in a relationship with Yahweh. Because he is the only solution. What is coming your way and soon is going to be far more fallacious than what you've experienced over this last year. And the only safe haven is Yahweh. Certainly, you must know now, if you are living in Yisrael or if you're a Jew outside of Yisrael, liberal Jews have betrayed you. The religious Jews are parasites among you. Your politicians are not the least bit credible. And while the rank and file of the IDF are heroic, the leadership of the IDF is despicable. In fact, there was a poll taken at Tel Aviv just this week among reservists, which about 80% wanted him to resign immediately. Have no confidence in him. And Gallant, the Minister of Defense for Israel, is a rotten, dirty scoundrel. He is a self-serving bastard. And so you have despicable men at the head of the Shin Bet, at the head of the Mossad, at the leadership ranks of the IDF. Despicable men as your political leaders. and those vying political leadership in Israel. You are clearly a house divided. You are a tough audience. And because of the fact that Yisrael said, we don't ever want to hear directly from God again, and the fact that for 2,500 years there wasn't a single Yehud who was interested in knowing Yahweh, who would accept him by name, who would engage in his covenant according to his conditions, who would celebrate the mikveh as they were intended. Because there was none, Yahweh decided that he would communicate to his people, awaken them through a herald, through a voice calling out in this dark time. I am that voice. We left off a week ago at Yoel 2:15. Now, there's an enormous difference between the job that I am doing and the job that Yoel did. Yoel was the prophet. His message is for us today. He literally spoke the words that God conveyed to him. My job is really quite different, and we work as a team. We're part of a covenant family. We are reaching out to you through the yadayah.com website. I would encourage you to go there. It is a wonderful reflection of God's mission and his message. Mm-hmm. There are some 33 books on the shelf. There's even now an explanation as to where you should begin. There are all sorts of resources and a community, a very active social media outreach, and all sorts of tools available for you to use, including a calendar that tells you where you have been and where you're going, so that you know your place in God's plan and in time. It's all there for you. Feel free to begin anywhere you'd like, but our mission now is to convey what Yahweh communicated through his prophets in a way that resonates with his people today. And it's essential. Mm-hmm. Because prior to 22 years ago, there was no one listening to Yahweh. No one knew his name. No one knew that his son, Dod, is the Messiah, is the Son of God, not that imposter. No one knew that he was the returning Messiah. And no one knew that he had volunteered to fulfill Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim. No one knew that he was returning with his father on Yom Kippur. No one knew that we were going full cycle. We were returning to whence we began. That Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim, our immortalization, where we have this eternal extension on life, our perfection as our faults were carried into Sheol and deposited there, our birth into Yahweh's covenant family on Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim. Prepare us for the Shavua harvest, which is upcoming, May 22nd, 2026. And following that, there is the Teruah harvest. It is strictly of Israelites and Yehudim, from the uppermost branches and from the branches that have been cut off. There is no Shavua harvest. There is no Teruah gleaning without this message. More importantly, Yahweh is committed to returning planet Earth on Yom Kippur, which begins at 6:22 p.m. as the sun sets in Jerusalem, October 2nd, 2033, 9 years from now. It is the ultimate homecoming. It is the restoration of the covenant relationship. It is the time that Dod will anoint the mercy seat of the Ark of the Covenant and fulfill the promise of reconciliation on this day, so that 5 days later, the entire earth can be restored, which Yoel the prophet spoke of, returning it to the conditions experienced in Eden. A world without religion, a world without politics, a world without war, a world without deceit and conspiracy and lies, a world where everyone who remains knows and loves Yahweh. We are coming full circle. That is where we are returning. And prior to this mission, it was unknown. And that is what we're sharing with you. And we're going to pick up the story with Yoel in the second chapter, 15th statement. Sound of the shofar. In Zion, among the signs posted along the way. Choose to be set apart and special, dedicated to serve, consecrating a fast, a time of abstaining from what others are consuming. Choose to announce and welcome the invitation to an assembly to meet. The shofar is the symbol that announces the final two harvests. The first is, as I have mentioned, on Shavuot. It is a harvest of all covenant members, whether they be Goyim or Yehudim, young or old, men or women, Yehudim or Gentile. The date this will be fulfilled is 7 years prior to Yahweh's return, which means it's on Shabbat, May 22nd of 2026. It is coterminous with the time that Israel will have its heart ripped out and that a state of Islamic terror will be carved out. It is the time that the effects of the Torahless One will begin to emerge. It is the time when the anguish that Jews have been experiencing since October 7th will take a dramatic turn for the worse. And so Yahweh is saying, sound the shofar. The shofar was used to signal one of two things. An alarm. An enemy is coming. That would certainly be fitting now, wouldn't it?
Yes, sir.
Oh, yes.
But also, to herald the arrival of something wonderful. And that's Yahweh's return.
Mm-hmm.
And it's imminent. There is a whole host of those who would say, we're not anti-Semitic, we're against Zionists. Well, that would make you against God. Because God is a Zionist. The word isn't spelled with a Z, by the way. It's a Tazdi that begins the word Zion. Tazdi, Yod, Wa, Nun. Zion. The word means signs posted along the way. The signs are comprised of the words of Yahweh. The way is between the goat's home and Yahweh's on the ridgeline of Moriah. The encouragement is to choose to be set apart and special, dedicated to serve, consecrating, Kadash. One of the things that is lost by almost everyone outside of this covenant family in the study of Yahweh's revelation to us is the idea of being set apart. It is very often corrupted to the concept of religious concept of holy.
Mm-hmm.
But holy in Hebrew, it's choli in Hebrew, is a disease. It's a horrible thing. It's deadly. God doesn't want anyone to be diseased. Nobody should be holy. But the idea to be kadosh is how it is written most of the time, is to be unique, to be special, to be uncommon. Well, what's the most common influence among humankind today.
Religion, politics.
Yeah, religion.
Mm-hmm.
Second unto it would be politics. So the two most common threads, influences in human society, are religion and politics. So you cannot be kadash, you cannot be special, you cannot be set apart, you cannot be uncommon if you are religious or if you are political or if you are both.
Mm-hmm.
The only way that you can comply with Yahweh's request is of your own volition to be anti-religious and anti-political, so that you become unique, special, and that disassociated from religion and politics, particularly if you are among those that knows the value of that so far and the message on those signs that are posted along the way, then you are prepared to serve.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no time more important than this one.
Yeah.
It's only 9 years left. And
20 months.
Seven of those nine are going to be hellacious. Yes, you and my wife are keeping a calendar, are you not? A countdown calendar.
Here, yes.
Of how much time we have.
3 weeks.
Yeah, how much time we have left. And I'm chuckling here for lots of reasons. One is that, as is the case with everything in Judaism, the Jewish calendar is dead wrong.
Yeah.
It isn't based on an analytical review of what the Torah says. Instead, it's a review of lunar cycles based upon a number that Maimonides favored due to his affinity with Islam, 19. It has no merit whatsoever. We are in year 5991, 9 years from year 6000. And that's really important, because at the end of the conclusion of the first set of 40 Yobel, of 50 years of return, of redemption and forgiveness that are symbolic of the Yobel, where all debts are forgiven, all slaves are freed, and we return to the land. At the end of the first 40 set of 50 years, the covenant was conceived between Yahweh and Abraham. Of course, that also included Sarah and Yitzhak, and then Jacob and his son. At the conclusion of the second set of 40 Yobel, year 33 CE, year 4000 Yah, those arrived for the second time to fulfill Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim, enabling all five benefits of the covenant. At the conclusion of the third set of 40 Yobel, or 50 years, year 6000 Yah, 2033, on our Romanesque calendars, the final three Yobel will be fulfilled. Teruah, Purim, and Sukkah, with us camping out with Yahweh for 1,000 years thereafter, between year 6000 and 7000 Yah. That is the timing. That is also Yahweh's invitation. In this statement, he says, choose to announce and welcome the invitation to an assembly to meet. The title that Yahweh has afforded his seven called out assemblies to meet each year, Pesach, Matzah, Bikurim, Shavuah, Teruah, Purim, and Sukkah, is Mikra in the singular and Mikra in the plural. The verb that lies at the heart of this title is kara. Mikra is mah plus kara. Mommy to ponder the implications of. Sankara is a wonderful term. I defined it here as announce, welcome, and invite. Those are three of the word's connotations. So it means to invite and to summon. It means to call out and meet and to welcome. It also means to pronounce and to read and recite. Powerful term. That's God defining what the purpose is of the seven Moed Mikre. And in between those words, he has Shom, which is abstain from what others are consuming. It's a comprehensive presentation of what we ought to be doing now. I have favorites when it comes to those who speak for God. You know, I'm most impressed by Moshe, but I'm also intimidated by him in the sense that his character is so exemplary. All of us, you know, almost have to blush in his presence. He just always did the right thing for the right reason. He's an extraordinary man. The way that he stood up for his people when he was living in the lap of luxury and still did what no one would do today. He put himself in harm's way to save an innocent man from being beaten to death. Of course, the Jews, being Jews, renounced him for doing so and threatened him rather than accept the favor. And when Yahweh asked Moshe to go back to Mitzrayim to liberate his people, and Moshe, of course, said, no, you got the wrong guy. I've already left that place, man. I'm going back. He came up with all manner of excuses, but that's the real reason. The Egyptians treated me like I was gold, and my own people treated me like I was crap. And you want me to go back to the people that treated me good to liberate the people who treated me badly? Is that really what you're asking? Thanks. Yeah, that's a raw deal. And yet, Yahweh was relentless with Moshe because there really wasn't another option. And he only worked through people, so he cajoled Moshe into the task. And Moshe, once he was in, he was all in. And from that point on, he just was extraordinary. And extraordinary amongst people that no one else in all of human history would have been able to tolerate. The Jews were horrible during the Exodus. And so he is the first of these great men who introduce us to these assemblies to meet, the most important of them, the most brilliant of them, the most articulate of them, the most courageous and compassionate of all men. Another man that would be very difficult to stand next to and not be a bit humbled. Yeah, he's dope. Yeah, dope was flawed where Moshe was not. But he had such passion and conviction that he overcame those flaws. Yahweh loved him more than anyone else in human history. And so even to be in his presence is going to be quite the experience. But, you know, there are other people that we meet along the way that are exceedingly endearing. I personally have a bromance with Yashaya. I love the man's intellect. And we have a lot of things in common. I love Elia for his sarcasm, sense of humor. He's great. But somebody that has really grown on me is Yoel, this prophet.
Mm-hmm.
Not well known.
He's so
brilliant. His turn of phrase. And this is the interesting thing about Yahweh, is that when he agreed not to speak directly to his people, but through men like Yoel, he allows the flavor of their personality, of their attributes and attitude, and what they themselves have come to know, shine through.
Yes.
So Yahweh's not using them as a dictaphone. He's not using them as a copy machine. He's speaking through them and giving them the opportunity to convey this message in such a way that it remains resolutely true, but has the unique flavor of each prophet's personality. And we see that in this man. He was brilliant. What a great linguist, and the ability to capture phraseology like this, sound the shofar in Zion, among the signs posted along the way, choose to be set apart, to be special, dedicated to serve, consecrating a fast, the time to abstain from what others are consuming, choose to announce and welcome the invitation to an assembly to meet. What is that assembly? Well, the first, the next on our agenda is Shavuot.
Mm-hmm.
Following that, the Shavuot. It'll be September 25th of 2033. 10 days later is the Day of Days, the homecoming. And as I was going to say, the reason that we're here doing this is you can't have a homecoming without people to come home to.
Yes.
And has Yahweh not engaged us to do this mission on behalf of his people, there would have been no one. And now there will be many. And this is what Yahweh has chosen to accomplish through us. So that is the third of the four remaining Mikrae to meet with Yahweh, the last being Sukkah, where we return to the conditions experienced at Eden and camp out on this planet as it is restored to the great garden of joy for 1,000 years. Now, the purpose of this blast is to draw Israel's attention to Zion, to the signs that are posted along the way. They explain what Father and Son have done and will do this ridgeline on Mount Moriah on behalf of the covenant family. Currently, there are scars along that ridgeline. They are scars that I hope to have the opportunity to obliterate. And given that opportunity, I will do so. If I'm not afforded that opportunity, I can assure you that the Dode will obliterate them. And if not Dode, then Yahweh. But the Dome of the Rock must go. Alaska Mosque must go.
Yes.
And Yahweh will replace them by the home for his covenant family. There have been many in Israel these past 2 weeks who are campaigning for the status quo of the Temple Mount such that Muslims can amass there and pray to Satan, and they can advance the agenda of their death cult. But Jews can't go. And that's the status quo, where the Temple Mount, Yahweh's home on earth, has been given over to the most satanic and anti-Semitic religion in the history of humankind, and virtually every politician in Israel thinks that's the right thing to do. I can tell you with all assurance that when I return with Elia in 2030, Pesach, isn't granted to me the opportunity to destroy it. It will be destroyed 3.5 years later upon Yahweh's return. Obliterated. It is a disgrace. It is a scar.
Mm-hmm.
It does not belong there.
Okay.
It is essential that Yehudim in particular, Israelites, begin to abstain from consuming the toxic rubbish that is poisoning the political and religious, but also that we, Korah, simultaneously announce the upcoming invitation to be called out and to meet with God. And in this case, while it would be, it could be Shavuah or Teruah, as I've shared with you, the Mikra that the prophet is most interested in calling our attention to is Kippurim, since it is a Moed without a minyan. It's the one Moed where we abstain, and therefore assumed to be a fast. Well, I'm not sure we abstain. But there is not a menu. And so if he's saying, let's not consume what the world is consuming, well, the natural inclination would be to assume that he's talking about Kippurim. And Kippurim really is the most joyous day on Yahweh's calendar. It's not the biggest of the harvest. The biggest of the harvest is going to be Shavuot. The smallest of the harvest will be on Teruah, a gleaning, if you will. But I can assure you, there will be Yehudim. There will be Israelites who will be gathered in Jerusalem on October 2nd as the sun sets on the human experience one last time, who will look up and will observe Yahweh returning with Dod, and Dod in God's presence will be as brilliant as the sun. And those that are there will experience what was written in Zechariah 12, accompanied by the one that we pierced, his son, Dod. And they will weep for God's firstborn, for all, not only that we put him through, but most importantly, for generation upon generation of Jews denying that he had offered this great sacrifice of life. Should you be listening to this before it occurs, the next harvest will be reaped on the Moed, the assembly to meet, the time of the renewing and eternal witness of Shavuot, 7-7, of the promise of the Shabbat. This substantial ingathering will transpire 7 years in advance of the fulfillment of Teruah, Kippurim, and Sukkah in year 6000, Yah, 2033. The time of Israel's troubles will play out in between these events. And while S is time, and Yisrael means those who engage and endure with God, but also those who struggle and strive against God.
Mm-hmm.
That this particular time, as it's related to the S, Yisrael, is Sar. And Sar is the active ingredient in Mitzrayim, plural, of ponder the implications of Sar. Of being confined, of being afflicted, of being abused, of being subjugated and oppressed. It's happened a lot to God's people, and it's going to happen far worse than at any time in human history over these next 7 years. In fact, this very prophet, Joel, told us that in the midst of this final 7 years, what Israel is going to experience will be worse than anything endured by humanity prior to this occasion. Worse than the whole. I can't. It's inevitable based upon what we're seeing all around us. What we're seeing play out as progressives fan the flames of Islamic rage against Israel, as an entire generation of college-age men and women are dumbed down to the mm-hmm. point of grotesque immorality.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've shared this information previously since it is vital to Yisrael's survival. The seven mikre have been and will be celebrated on the following schedules and for this reason. The first that was celebrated, Pesach Passover. It was fulfilled on the 14th of Abib in year 4000 Yah, which was a Thursday and Friday, April 2nd and 3rd in 33 CE. The Messiah and Son of God, Dod, was brought back to life after 1,000 years to sacrifice his newly consecrated basar, which is a corporeal body, as the lamb. He allowed the Romans, in fact, he even predicted that the Romans would crucify him 500 years before crucifixion existed as a form of torment, of anguish, and 700 years before Rome even existed, and that he would do so to open the door to life. He wrote about this in Mizmor 22 and 88. The eyewitness count of what occurred was scribed by Dod himself, 1,000 years in advance of him enduring it. It was written in first person. The only reasonable and informed conclusion is he wrote about his fulfillment of Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim in first person 1,000 years before he endured this torment, because he was the Passover lamb, because he fulfilled Matzah leading to Bukurim.
If you don't mind, I have something to add to that.
Mm-hmm.
If you read along in Shemos 12, where Moshe writes the instructions for how to process the Pesach lamb, and then you read Mizmor 22, you'll see that Dod actually describes what the parts that Moshe asked us to set into the bowl to be burned are feeling. It's actually stunning to read them together side by side and realize Dod is pointing even back to the Torah, that he is the lamb.
Why don't you write down your observations and your correlation between what
Moshe... I have that. I'll send it to you.
Oh, please. And we'll share it.
Yes,
it is universally true that Moshe and Dod are inseparable. You know, I spoke of them as being the two most important men who ever lived. Men whose character is exemplary, men Yahweh deeply loves. The two men that Yahweh accomplished the most through, Moshe and Dod, they are the two great Zeruah. With Dod being the sacrificial lamb and the strong arm of God, and Moshe being the ram who led the flock of Yahweh out of harm's way. But the reason that Moshe and Dod are hand in glove is that by delivering the Torah, Moshe explained what Dod would do and why it would benefit us.
Right.
And then Dod fulfilled those events. It is the sad thing about Christianity is that they have their man-God dying, but for no reason. How is being tortured somehow good? What's the purpose of a dead god on a stick? Does the stick have magical powers? What in the world do they think was accomplished by this stupid notion that men killed God? But you see, with Moshe's explanation of Pesach and Matzah and Bukurim, with the children of Yisrael living it out as the Exodus began, and even more importantly, 2,000 years before Dode, or 1,000 years before Dode, 2,000 years before he fulfilled it, with Abraham and Yitzhak experiencing on Mount Moriah precisely what Yahweh and Dode would do by providing the lamb.
Mm-hmm.
And when you recognize that Yahweh, through Moshe, explained the purpose and the timing of the Moed Mikre, and then Dode, having studied it, in fact, Dode wrote the single most expressive and expansive intellectual essay on the Torah and how to observe it in the 119th Mizmor Psalm, the longest of them, alphabetically going through the 22 letters in the Hebrew language, offering 8 insights per letter on how to get the most out of your observations of the Torah. Dode figured it out.
Yep.
And once he figured it out, he volunteered to serve as the Passover lamb. He volunteered to serve as the soul carrying our guilt into Sheol so that we appear perfect in God's eyes because our guilt has been removed. We're innocent. No reason for salvation, no reason for any of that because we're perfect in God's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And all of this is explained in the Torah and then lived out through Dode.
Yes.
So they are inseparable.
Mm-hmm.
One explained what was going to happen, the other made it happen. It's interesting that everything that's important here with, Yah occurs in three. I told you there were three sets of 40 Yovel,
mm-hmm.
that
mm-hmm.
each of the major events and fulfillments of the Moed Mikre and the covenant were laid out through those three sets of 40 Yovel, your 2,000, 4,000, and 6,000 Yah, 1968 BCE, 33 CE, and 2033. On our calendar,
mm-hmm.
well, there's also three Zeruah, two mighty Zeruah. The Zeruah that told us what God was going to do, when he was going to do it, why he was going to do it, and how this mattered to us, and who issued the invitations for us to capitalize on Pesach, Masa Bikurim, Shavua, Teruah, Kippurim, and Sukkah. There is the Zeruah who was the strong arm of God, the Zeruah who served as the sacrificial lamb, who fulfilled and honored God's promises, delivering the benefits of the covenant, and who will return to fulfill Kippurim and Sukkah as our king in your 6,000 Yah. This is Dode. He is the mightiest of the Zeruah. But there is a third. Because even though Moshe explained these things, there's not, well, until fairly recently, there wasn't a single Jew on the planet who understood what Moshe had invited us to participate in relative to the Mikre. Not a single Yehudim on earth understood the correlation between the Bereth covenant and these Mikre invitations to be called out and meet with God.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, one without the other is useless. You need both. And because of the fact that religious Jews have plastered over the Torah with their Talmud and have corrupted Yahweh's covenant and Mikre to the point that it's no longer comprehensible, gibberish, somebody had to reintroduce God's intent and purpose and timing to God's people. But more than this, the single greatest discovery in human history relative to eternal life and to God is the realization that God's Son the Messiah, Dod, served to fulfill, volunteered to fulfill, came back to honor the promises and endure the sacrifices of Pesach and Masa leading to the Kodom. There wasn't anyone, Jew or Goyim, who knew this prior to a few years ago when we discovered it and are now sharing it. And so God would need a third Zeruah to awaken his people. Because what Moshe said has no value unless somebody explains it to Yisrael. What Dod did has no value unless somebody awakens Yisrael to the fact that he served to fulfill the first three Moed Mikre and what that means to us as it relates to becoming immortal, being perfected, being adopted into the covenant family of the creator of the universe, of Yahweh, being enriched and empowered by him. If those things aren't known, there is no fulfillment of Shavuot. There is no fulfillment of Teruah. There is no homecoming on Kippurim. There's no celebration of a return to Eden on Sukkah. The entire human experience is for naught. So God would deploy a third Zeruah. This one had the responsibility of sowing the seeds which would take root and grow. The seeds being the words of Moshe and Dod, and the great prophets like Yahshayah and Yoel, such that there would be a fruitful and productive Shavuah harvest, a wonderful gleaning of Yisrael and Yehudim on Teruah, and most important of all, a joyous homecoming on Yom Kippur, so that Yahweh is pleased with the quality of those he gets to spend eternity with from Sukkah. That is why we're here. That is why we represent this shofar. We are the voice calling out. We are the herald of this king. Therefore, after Pesach, we come to Matzah. Matzah is the most important of these 3 days. Religious Jews have really screwed this up brutally. They make Passover a 7-day holiday, and Matzah is simply an ingredient to be consumed during Passover. Not that way at all. The overriding important day is Matzah. Without Matzah, Passover is counterproductive. A soul would become immortal, but unperfected, and therefore eternally separated from God. That means an eternity in Sheol. And Matzah also includes Bikurim, which is the adoption into the covenant family. And so Matzah is the key day. Matzah is the ultimate sacrifice that was made by Dod. Because after his corporeal body was bludgeoned by the Romans and was mutilated and discarded, having fulfilled its purpose and then incinerated, Dod's nephesh soul carried our guilt into Sheol. He deposited it there, never to be seen again. He endured the two most hellish days in human existence, all because it would be an eternal celebration of the third day of Bikurim, of firstborn children. And forevermore, everyone who is part of the covenant family will have really two men to thank. Moshe for sharing what Yahweh intended through these days, and Dod, most of all, for making it possible. He's our Savior. He's far more than our Messiah. He is more even than the Son of God. He is our Zeruah. He is our Yatsa. He is our Savior. And so matzah on yeasted bread was fulfilled the following day, the 15th of Abib, at the beginning of the 80th Yobel. This was the Shabbat of a Friday, April 2nd at sunset, continuing through the Shabbat, the end of Saturday, the April 3rd, 33 CE. During the Mikra, Job's nefesh soul was laden with the guilt symbolized by the yeast, which was removed from the bread of every covenant member, which he carried with him into Sheol, the place of separation known as hell. With it all having been deposited in what is akin to a black hole of complete darkness where nothing escapes, God's children appear perfect in his eyes. This not only prepares us to enter Yahweh's presence, it makes us serviceable, such that we can work with God. He only sees the good in us as a result of Dode's magnanimous gift.
Thank you.
You know, we
thank you,
Dode. Yeah, his covenant family. We work with Yahweh. He is our Father, but he is also God. And none of us are intimidated in his presence. Doubt to him. We don't praise him. We don't pray to him. We don't do any of the worshipful things that the religious do. He's that.
Yeah.
He is our friend. He's our co-worker. He is thrilled with what we are doing because all he sees is the good in us. He recognizes that what we're doing for his family is bringing the result that he has long desired, and so it's enormously pleasurable for him. And it makes it very comfortable to be in God's presence, knowing that everything that I have and will do that is counter to what I should have done, so all God sees is the best that we have to offer. And so even though he happens to be God, we can be comfortable in his presence. We can approach him just as a child approaches a loving father. This is possible because of matzah. The next day, is Bechorim, firstborn children. It is symbolic of our adoption into Yahweh's covenant family. On this day, the 16th of Abib, in year 4000 Yah, April 4th, 33 CE, Bechor, firstborn son, was released from Sheol and returned home to his father, mission accomplished. With the fulfillment of the 7-day celebration of Chag Matzah, the benefits of the covenant we're enabled. We are adopted into the family. We are immortal. We are perfected. We are enriched. And we are empowered. This makes it possible for us to blow the shofar and to sow the seeds that will produce the harvest of standing grain, both prominent and mature, representing the covenant family. Also occurring on a Shabbat commencing at sunset, May 22nd, 2026. Yeah, consider this your invitation. One announced by the shofar and the publication of Yada Yahuwah. Yeah, those who would avail themselves of this harvest are rewarded with an express ticket to Shamayim in heaven. And while they avoid being caught up in the time of Jacob's troubles, that is a huge benefit because as bad as it is now, and it's tough to watch the news now, it's going to get geometrically worse beginning in 2 years and running the 7 years after that. So the Shavuot harvest is of Goyim and of Yehudim. It is a was introduced by Moshe as a festival feast where everyone was invited, whether they be Goy or Yisrael, whether they be young or old, men or women, whether they be even part of the covenant. You can still celebrate, doesn't mean you're going to be harvested, but it is an open invitation to invite everyone, because everyone is welcome. The menu is expansive on this day. And there's so much symbolism, and in fact, I think Dee is probably the foremost expert on the various symbols that are associated with Shavuot, and really is the one who came to realize before anyone that while the Christian New Testament in Acts has Peter proclaiming the fulfillment of what they call Pentecost, which is timed as Shavuot, there is no evidence that occurred. There was no harvest then.
Nope.
And so Shavuot is yet unfulfilled. And the natural date for its fulfillment is the 7-year date at the beginning of the time of Jacob's troubles, 7 years before Yahweh's return. Just so happens to be a Shabbat as well. And that leaves Shavuot to be fulfilled along with Kippurim and Sukkot in year 6000 Yah, just as the first three Moed Mikrei were fulfilled in year 4000 Yah, the final three are fulfilled in year 6000 Yah. And Shavuot now.
Oh no. Did we lose him?
I think so. We just hold on just a minute. Let's see if he comes back to the microphone.
Okay. Well, just to expound on what he's saying until he returns, that the initial three Moed Mikrei were fulfilled in 33 CE, then Shavuot sort of spans the gap in time between them, culminating in the harvest of all souls in time that are immortal, good and bad. And then the final three Moed Mikrei are fulfilled again, similar to 33 CE in 2033 CE in the same year. So that's what he was explaining to us. So, very interesting stuff. I hope he makes it back on so we can finish talking.
Yeah.
I have a little list here just to fill the space while we wait.
Okay.
If you want, I can go over it about the Pesach lamb and the comparison between Mizmor 22 and Shemot 12.
Please
so each piece of offal, which I've, in my opinion, could be equated to a physical or mental process that a man would use improperly at one point or another in his life. So Moshe describes the skin, the physical body and the cover of mortals. And Dode describes what happened to his skin. And it talks about the head, including the human senses. Our senses can be used to make bad decisions. And Dode describes what his senses were experiencing and what his head, his tongue was feeling and the pain that he was enduring. Also the blood, which is the life that was put in a bowl, described in Shemot 12, to be burned. All of these parts were burned completely. The bones, which is the skeletal structure and the foundation of a mortal man, the way he walks, his feet. So all of these things are put to the side and burned, and the only thing that remained of Dode, aka the Pesach lamb, was that which was fit for use, that which was edifying and edible, the roasted meat to feed the family. So in a sense, everything that Dode had engaged that was improper was gone, and just like he removed all of ours. So that was the cool connection to Shemot 12. So when you read Mizmor 22, I encourage everyone to read Shemot 12 and see those comparisons where Job's literally explaining the parts that Moshe had to set aside for burning. I cried when I read it. It was so sad, you know.
And the beauty of the whole thing, I think we're back connected again, is that rather than the idiocy of a bodily resurrection, which would be counterproductive, you want to be eternal, you want to be perfect, you want to be able to explore the vastness of this universe, you want to enter the presence of Yahweh in the seventh dimension, you can't have a physical body. That needs to be shed. It's very much like what fire does, which is why it is used as a metaphor throughout these Moed Mikra, where fire takes physical organic material and transforms it into radiant energy, light, warmth. And the very same thing is what the purpose of Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim do for us. They transform mortal beings who have a finite life, who are decaying, who are imperfect, who are very limited in what they can achieve, into infinitely superior and enriched and empowered and enlightened spiritual beings. Vastly better than the idiocy and the counterproductive nature of bodily resurrection. The Passover lamb is never resurrected. It does not come back to life. That would defeat the purpose. The body, the bashar, was discarded in favor of emancipating the soul, the nefesh. And that is what actually occurred. And that's why Dodes, what was left of his mutilated body, had served its purpose. It was discarded. It was incinerated, just as the Torah explains. It was good riddance. The exact opposite of bodily resurrection, which is a plague on Judaism, on Islam, and on Christianity. The next part of it. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you explained that the first time I read Yada Yada, that goes back about 17 years now. Explained all that, and all of a sudden, for the first time, everything fit. You know, that you said you can't go in different dimensions. Come on, there's no difference. Your body couldn't do it. You can't deal with anything beyond that. But you have suits to get to the moon, you know, and you can't stay there very long. So everything was just like this. Oh, okay, well, that's the way it works. So they display how there's so many things in Yada Yada that you wrote and picked up on. And this revelation, to me, is a revelation. It's playing after this, after this, after this, and all of a sudden you start connecting the dots and you say, wow, but that makes absolute sense. This is the most logical approach to life.
I was reading a letter that our webmaster, David, wrote today about his journey with us, and you know, we are really gifted. The Yada Yada website is the treasure. It is exceedingly well laid out, and it's just a tremendous resource. If you're listening to this program, please go to yadayada.com. He's proud of it. I'm proud of it. We're all proud of, and I won't call it his website, even though he built it for us, but it's our website. It's part of the Covenant family. He would call it that as well. But when he was talking about this journey, he said that, you know, that the whole process of developing the website was helping him initially read the books in a way that was most convenient for him. So he created this EPUB capability, and then that led to, well, I want to be able to read them wherever I am, and that became part of him beginning to present this online. But that he even said, you know, I'm doing it selfishly. I have invested my money, I've invested my time in creating and building this website. And I'm possessive of it, I'm proud of it, of what we've achieved. But quite frankly, we all do it selfishly.
Oh, yeah.
We love the Lord.
I enjoy it.
We gain from our relationship with Yahweh. It is an enjoyable, the most enjoyable and productive, valuable way to spend our time. And when you recognize that you're doing something, as he has done and continues to do, that brings great satisfaction to our Heavenly Father, that's a very good place to be. And we have come a long way. You know, I'm constantly editing these books and trying to keep them consistent with what we're learning. And while there are little things and sometimes big things that we discover along the way, if you consider the probably tens of thousands of unique insights contained in the Yada Yada series, things that no one has seen over the past 3,000 years, and how many of them are, and how many of those are unheralded, and how many have been right from the very beginning. Very notion of we have to shed our physical nature to be liberated in the fourth dimension, which is time, and Yahweh lives in the seventh dimension, and so for us to transition through these dimensions, which is an infinite increase as we move from one to the next, requires tremendous enrichment and empowerment on God's behalf, which can only be done if we are elevated from physical beings to becoming light-based beings. And the very concept that you were talking about fire and the things that are consumed, fire is such a perfect metaphor because it consumes decayed physical organic matter and transforms it into radiant energy and light.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that was the purpose of the sacrificial offering. It's like a combustion. It's energy. It's turning what is matter, physical matter, into a different form completely. That's the purpose of the Bayes, to demonstrate
this. In this regard, one of the smartest Yehud who ever lived, Einstein, taught us something that Yahweh has made very clear for a long time, which is that physical matter and energy are the same thing.
Yes.
They're just different amounts of the same thing. That we are infinitely enriched and empowered as we make the transition from matter to energy. Matter is simply a diminished form of energy, which is why we must multiply matter by the square of the speed of light to equate to the same amount matter that you find in energy. So it is it's an exponential change. But they are the same thing, just like that dying and decaying organic matter is transformed from matter into energy by the fire. Teruah,
very well put,
is the next Mikra. It is known as trumpets. It is therefore also of the shofar. It is an olive harvest. The olives are Israelites. We think that there will be some 7,000 Yehudim and Israelites who are harvested on this day. It will occur on a Shabbat, commencing on the first day of the seventh month in year 6000 Yah, September 23rd, 2033. Well, it's 23rd or 25th. Sometimes I've forgotten the day. It's the Shabbat in 2033. It will be announced by a solar eclipse, the shofar, and by Yada Yahweh. The two witnesses, Yada and Eliyah, will be in Jerusalem, calling God's people home for 3.5 years prior to this final gleaming, prior to the homecoming of Yom Kippur. The intent is to keep the returning flock out of harm's way, because the last 10 days of man's domination over the earth are going to be hell. It's hard to imagine how bad those 10 days are for Yahweh to specifically remove this remnant of his people prior to this date. So Purim Reconciliations is actually the happiest day on Yahweh's calendar. It is the final gleaning. On this day, there will be 7,000 Yehudim who will be gathered in Jerusalem awaiting God's arrival with Yahweh. If you want to know how that is going to transpire, read Yirmiyah 31 and read Zechariah 12. They are brilliantly descriptive of this event. If you want to know what's going to happen, read the story earlier in Zechariah as he explains how Dod is going to serve as the high priest to anoint the Kippurim. And then read in the Torah on what happens on Yom Kippurim, which is where Aaron, because he was a screw-up, his participation in creating the golden calf was abysmal. And he, at times, gave Moshe a difficult time. He, to serve in the role that he was serving, needed atonement even for himself. And so Yahweh said, you know, there's going to be the blood of a bull and that of a scapegoat, of a goat, to be sprinkled on the seat of the Kippurim, the mercy seat, to which Kippurim is based on the same verb that underlines Kippurim, which is the plural, which speaks of reconciliation. And so it is the high priest's responsibility to sprinkle the blood of both the bull and the goat on the mercy seat to symbolically prepare Yisrael for its ultimate reconciliation with Yahweh. And if you recall, when Yahweh explained why Dod wouldn't build the first covenant home, he gets to build the one that lasts forever, so he's not exactly shortchanged in this regard. But Yahweh said, because he had blood on his hands. The blood he's going to have on his hands is when he sprinkles it on the mercy seat of the Ark of the Covenant, so that Yisrael is reconciled again with Yahweh. It was a marvelous prophecy of what is yet to transpire.
Another one of those unique insights. It really blew me away when you pointed that out, because it's so misrepresented. And another one of your very unique insights.
There is so much that Dod represents. And when you're studying Zechariah, is one of the most important prophets to garner an appreciation of if you want to know what is going to happen. He speaks specifically of the two witnesses that are going to arrive. And he's the one that equates them to the olive trees and to the branch. The shoder, which is the role that I play, is a branch. And speaks of them as it relates to the menorah, which has the seven, not nine, seven candlesticks, each one representing one of the Moed Mikrais. When you go to yadayah.com, Jackie created this beautiful animation of the menorah and shows each candle and what it represents as it relates to the Moed Mikrais and the progression that we have through this light to coming to know Yahweh, and how even that menorah is tied into the symbolism of the rainbow that is the sign of the covenant and the colors of it as we go through the this progression. And there's a tie-in to not only to the two witnesses, but also to Moshe and Dod and the third Zeruah as it relates to this menorah. And it is Zechariah who explains this to us and the role that these individuals play. And then he introduces us to the fact that there is no one to serve as the high priest because the Israelites are way too solid. And so there's someone who is dressed as the high priest. And it speaks of clothing this individual to serve in that role. And it's Dode who is serving in that role. And he's the one who fulfills the Moed Mikra. He fulfills this one. That's the first mission of this day. And it brings back the object of the Exodus, of the covenant, of the Ark of the Covenant, and how it holds the original, well, actually the replacement tablets, because Moshe was not happy when he returned to his people, because they were already being religious, so he had to have a second set made. Yeah. But yeah, he did. You can see the Yahweh did not get upset with Moshe for chunking them, because it was understandable under the circumstances. God does not matter. He does not get upset with us when we are angry, when our anger is righteous indignation, as it was in this case. But also, beside that Ark of the Covenant is the original autograph of the Torah, the very one that Yahweh had Moshe write for us. It's been preserved there. It is currently in Yirmiyah's grotto, underneath the very place where Dode fulfilled the Pesach sacrifice. And it is going to be lifted up, and it's going to be one of the signs that Yahweh uses to draw his people home, that the two witnesses will speak to. At the same time, Yahweh is taking what we collectively have written, and these now really profoundly moving videos that our team, Dee, Molly, and my wife in particular, Leah, have produced, that are on not only on YouTube, but also on Rumble. And now this program is being simulcast on full array of other sites because of what we've done recently in conjunction with Apple. And not just Apple, I'm sorry, with Amazon.
Yeah.
So there are so many ways that we've communicated the message, and Yahweh is going to lift that up as a sign. Yada Yahweh. As a sign to call his people home during this final gleaning of Teruah and the homecoming on Yom Kippur. So Yom Kippur is the day of reconciliation. We're going to go just briefly past this 90-minute period. As we do so, I want to, and we're still going to talk about Sukkah here in this program, but what I want to share is what we're going to do going forward so no one is surprised. This program is going to come to a conclusion in a matter of minutes. I'm going to refrain from doing two-hour shows. It is very difficult on the various platforms that this program is being posted to have that long a program. And it's just not conducive to the format that that we have to reach out to Yisrael. So we're going to do hour shows and rather than two-hour shows, and we're going to gradually wean this one down to 90 minutes and then to an hour, and then we're going to do a second show each week. So there'll be two of these, and it's much more effective in terms of the various ways that the programs can be broadcast and reach out to God's people. So as we finish this presentation on Kippur, It is going to be Yada and Elia that are among those who encourage and prepare Yisrael so that they're ready to populate the millennial Shabbat. This is the final remnant of those of God's people who are called home. It is the ultimate homecoming celebration. It is commiserate with Yahweh's return with his beloved son, Dode, who at the time, as I've shared, will anoint the mercy seat, the Kapporeth of the Ark of the Covenant, consistent with the Torah instruction. This is the final opportunity, because judgment will commence immediately thereafter. All the while, father and son will be celebrating the ultimate family reunion as God restores the earth to the conditions experienced at Eden. This is something that we figured out almost 20 years ago. And it became obvious that we were told the Eden story because God wants to return humankind back to those conditions. But it is the prophet Joel who specifically announces that as the final war is waged, this thousandfold more macabre and savage Islamic assault on Israel than was experienced on October 7th, that behind the incineration of those belligerents is an earth restored to the conditions experienced in Eden. And that brings us to Sukkah, the destination. Everything with Yahweh is 6 plus 1. 6 is the number of man who is created on the 6th day, a carbon-based life form with the atomic number of 6. Plus God, who is 1 equals 7, the destination of the Moed Mikre, is Sukkah. It means shelters. It is our opportunity to camp out with our Heavenly Father for 1,000 years and then forevermore. The party begins on the Shabbat of October 7th, 2033, the 15th day of the 7th month in year 6000 Yah. It will be announced by Dod, our king, and heralded by the specter of a lunar eclipse. Thereafter, with all of God's children becoming seven-dimensional, we will be witnesses to the creation of a new universe, one to explore throughout time. It's a good place for us to stop this program and prepare for our next. We thank you very much for listening. We thank you for all the opportunities to be on the various sites now that Amazon has made possible. Thank you, Dee, for leading our social media outreach. Thank you, David, for developing such a wonderful website at yadayah.com. Thank you, Jackie, and your edit team for making these books all possible. They are free entirely online. They're available for publishing costs without royalty at Amazon.com, and soon will be in a store that provides access to even other printers. We thank you for listening. We wish everyone the world over who is listening to this message an open mind, a receptive heart, eyes to see, ears to hear. What Yahweh, our God, is saying to us, and the invitation His Son has provided for us to be part of His eternal family. May Yahweh bless you all. Happy Shabbat and good night.
Amen. Shalom, shalom.
Shabbat shalom, guys.
Night.
Bye.
Now open. Visit HitchBlast.com to buy now and September 15th.